Welcome to another session of the Anima Social Impact Summit. Today, I am talking with Sarah Brill. We're going to be exploring her work around financial well-being, how that supports both organizations and individuals around their well-being when it comes to finances and the impacts that this has, not only with the organizations, but with the individuals themselves. So to start with, Sarah, why don't you just introduce a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what maybe led you to this work?
Hi, Robert. Thank you very much for having me on today. I am a financial coach and planner, and I have been working with a company for the past year or so in really helping to reach people, improve their financial situation, whether that's employees or people that are starting their own business, and really just educating people around what financial coaching actually means.
And when you sort of begun this, or maybe a better question is, what led you to going into this sort of work?
Yeah, so financial coaching was never something that was on my radar. I never really knew that it existed, and there's a good reason for that, in that financial coaching in the UK hasn't really hit the mainstream yet. There's a lot of movement that's happening in the financial space. So in terms of financial advice and financial education, but we're quite behind other countries, say America, for example, that already have an established market for financial coaches. And I lived abroad, so I was an expat for about 10 years. So I've traveled to many different places. I've worked in a lot of different places. And what I noticed was, I guess, the different money habits that people have, right? The different attachments that we have to money. And at any point in time, you know, our attachment to money can vary depending on what's going on in our life. And it wasn't until I really started coaching off the back of completing my Animas coaching qualification that I started to question my own financial journey. Right, as becoming an entrepreneur, what does that mean? What does that look like in terms of finances? And fundamentally, how do I create a life that is truly enjoyable and has financial security, financial freedom, that we can both enjoy life but also fulfill and help other people as well? So this is when I started to explore sort of financial coaching, look more into finances, and discovered financial coaching. I started training as a financial coach. And over the past year, that's just sort of evolved over time. And it's become my main focus of what my coaching is about.
And when you think about sort of financial coaching as your focus and the thing that you do, what's the impact that it has with those that you work with?
So this is, this is two halves, right? Because there's the people that I can work directly with, but also the bigger impact that the company that I'm partnered with is trying to achieve. And for me directly, I think perhaps a good place to start is sort of the challenge that exists, right? The problem in particularly in the UK that exists is that almost 29 million people or 29 million working adults in the UK aren't satisfied with their finances. So when you think about the scale, if you've got 80 million people in the UK, you're talking about a huge, vast majority of the workforce, which is feeling financially inadequate. And more further studies have been done to suggest that almost 26 million people are in fact financially vulnerable. Right. So, you know, there's sort of a question around where do people go for financial advice? Right? Like, who do we speak to? And there is a bit of a taboo around finances. People, I guess, don't feel necessarily comfortable to speak about finances, and particularly in the workplace, this might come across as, you know, people asking for pay rises, or people moving jobs, right? People are twice as likely to move a job or career if they're not satisfied with their finances. There's on average 30 days less productivity as a direct link of anxiety caused by finances. And this is costing companies billions of pounds, right? They're paying their staff, and there's a mismatch because employees feel, you know, maybe they're burnt out or they're not spending their money as effectively as they could be. And so maybe they get into debt, or maybe they're not optimizing. Maybe they're worrying about the future, worrying about retirement. There's loads of different reasons why people might have financial anxiety. But I guess fundamentally what we're doing is we're helping educating people to fill that space. People have a lack of confidence. They don't know who to go to. And naturally, the people we're going to go to are those people around us. So maybe our parents, our friends, colleagues even. But unless we really have parents who are very well educated themselves in finance, you know, we might be passing on money habits that aren't necessarily serving us very well. And the market's changing very quickly. And so what we aim to do is twofold. It's educating people. So it's like the Italian proverb, you know, you give someone a fish and they can eat for one meal, but you teach them how to cook and they can cook for life, right? So it's kind of like that. It's educating people the opportunities that are open to them so that they can choose or decide what is going to be most financially beneficial, right? So that might be short-term goals, so in the next 5 years. It might be medium term, so next 10, 20 years, and it might be long term, so looking into retirement and beyond, right? So that's sort of one side, educating people. And I think the other side is the practicality. It's the practicality of saying, I need to save more. What do I know about investing, right? What do I know about my pension? There was an interesting article written that was published last week by Hargreaves and Lansdowne, and they found that 77% of women don't know that their pension is invested, right? So you have over three quarters of the female population who simply have no understanding of what their pension is doing, yet it's working for us, and that's what's going to pay us you know, when we retire, essentially. And for a lot of people who are living longer, so people are living, you know, till about 81 on average, right? We retire maybe about 67 in the UK. So you've got about 20 years that you're sort of looking to live off, right? And so actually taking the action now, which is going to have a positive impact and help people financially, is the other thing that we do. And we found that our recent study showed that in their first year of coaching with us and combining that with a plan, people are, I think it was something like £9,700 better off in year one. So we're making significant impacts mentally, but also tangible, you know, I guess movements which people are seeing through their savings. Yeah.
And I'm sort of curious here about what led you to work with finance to help people?
Oh, that's a very good question. So I guess I've done lots of things. Anyone that might know me might know that I've sort of dabbled in a lot of different things. I started a career in social media. And I've sort of transitioned. I used to work in an agency, and that exposed me to lots of different businesses. But I've always been client facing. I've always been someone who wants to help tackle challenges or problems and get to the bottom of maybe what's really going on so that we can move forward. And I think when I was traveling for about 3 years, you sort of detach yourself a little bit, right? You detach yourself from maybe the world and the world's problems and what's going on. So for me, I was living in a little island in the middle of nowhere. And I'm the type of person that wants to go as remote as possible. So nowhere where tourists are, right? And I started to realize sort of, you know, how people were living was just so different. It's the lifestyle that we have created in the Western world is so complex. We have so many expenses these days, right? You know, we have £2,000 laptops and £1,000 phones, not to mention the car and the kids and education. Life is expensive and it's demanding. And through my own financial anxieties, I'm someone who's a big saver. And although I was very lucky to be working in a very senior role, you know, I was very mindful myself about saving. And that set me up quite well to, you know, advance my own career as an entrepreneur, as a coach. But I think it was just the idea of bringing things back into reality and making it actually tangible. So the first time I saw a financial plan, I'd heard of financial plans years ago. I used to have a mentor, possibly about 8 years ago, who was a financial advisor. And she was telling me, you know, how important it was to have a financial plan. And I was like, oh, this jargon. It's just, you know, what is a plan? Who needs a plan? We just go with the flow. We'll just see how life goes. And that's pretty much how I lived, especially when I was traveling. But I think I realized, you know, you get to a certain age and you're like, actually, let's just recheck in. You know, you can't, well, maybe you can live like this forever, but you don't know until you ask the question, right? Maybe that is sustainable. Maybe you can travel on savings forever. But until you sort of ask the question and see what is possible, you never really know. And when I saw the financial plan for the first time, I was like, this is something that everyone should have access to. Everyone should have access to their own sort of plan for life.
So when you sort of that you know, you get exposed to that plan for life for yourself, and then you decide to work with others, and you alluded there to that the company you work with having sort of a bigger vision. I'm just curious, what's the vision that they have, and how does that sit with you?
Well, it depends who you ask. We all come from different walks of life, and that's the beauty of coaching, right? It means that, you know, as coaches, we resonate with different people at different points in time. And I guess as an organization, they can provide coaches from different walks of life, which will help specific people in certain ways. So we all bring a certain specialty or experience to the table, if you like. And I think their goal is really, I mean, it's to empower employees for sure, to educate, better educate people. And I think really there is this missing piece of, you know, not having financial education at school. Right, we're talking primary school level, and you come out of school and you go to university. I'm talking about these days. University costs, you know, 12 grand, right? Minimum. And so by the time you finish university, you know, people coming out of university these days are already 30, 40 grand in debt. And they're not educated about their pension. I didn't know about a pension or how a pension works until a few years ago. Until I really sort of asked the question. And ultimately, I guess people are having this financial anxiety. There is, we don't know what we don't know, right? So it's not even that people see it as a problem until we ask the question, right? What is in your pension pot? Well, I don't know. Well, if 77% of all the working population in the UK, women in the UK think like that, well, you know, what happens when those people get to retirement? And I think the company's vision is really to sort of fill that gap and make it affordable for everyone. They would say make it affordable for everyone, because financial advice is available, but only if you can afford it. And that creates sort of an even bigger wealth gap, right? So the idea is that we can serve people of all levels, no matter what their income, and we can empower them to make their own financial decisions if they have the right education. So I think that's what the company would say.
I guess as I'm listening to this, that it starts to make me think about, from a social impact perspective, there is definitely the idea of empowering women to be aware of their finances. And I guess there's also an element of it empowering us to survive or thrive in our later years. So I'm just curious, how do you sort of go about that empowering women piece? What does it mean for you?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting one. We were having a conversation about this with a few of my colleagues the other day. I think there is to a degree a gender pay gap. I believe it's more a maternity pay gap, if you like, in so much as women have children and they might take time off to care for children, and likewise women tend to be the carers later in life for parents, and with that there is a sort of, I guess, a lack of education. It's more of a knowledge gap that exists, because I guess naturally these are the roles that sort of emerge, right? So, you know, when I coach people, if it might be around family planning, for example, you know, have people thought about whether someone is going to work, or whether, you know, you're going to take maternity leave, and what impact does that have? And do you know, if you're going to take maternity leave, that your pension contributions are actually reduced? So if you take an extended maternity leave, what impact does that have later on in life? And some women don't return to work. Some women return to work part-time. And all of these are fine scenarios. It's just a case of planning to make sure that, okay, if your expectation is that you're not going to go back to work, but, you know, you're going to have a state pension, right, then maybe we need to reassess what other options there are, because if you're not paying tax, you're not going to get your state pension. So it's more of a case of educating women. I think men is also important, but really educating people so that they can have their own freedom to say, actually, you know what, I'm okay with the outcome, and managing that expectation. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done around educating.
And so you talk about there being a lot of work to be done. It makes me think about the challenge that you might face within this field of work, as you're there trying to support others to manage their finances or become aware and knowledgeable about their finances. Can you talk a little bit about what's the challenges that you might face as you're sort of going about this work?
What challenges do I face? I mean, from a personal point of view, the market changes very quickly. So I guess if a person was to go away and look something up on their own, it might take them a long time to do it. So part of the benefit of having a financial coach is that I can provide and refer the best services to someone. What that means for me is staying on top of the market all the time to see what's going to happen. And we saw sort of, you know, in coronavirus, the peak of the pandemic that just happened, you know, there were big conversations happening, right? Like, what is furlough? This is like the first time, you know, a few months ago, people had never even heard of what furlough was, right? What does this mean? What does that mean for my savings? You know, my children are no longer at school, or maybe my children have now decided not to go to university. And this is a really big challenge, right? Managing, I guess, not only the practicals of finance, but the mindset that sits behind it in times of uncertainty, right? So acknowledging that perhaps things at the moment aren't as stable as they normally would be. Right. So I wouldn't say it's a challenge, But I do need to be mindful about the circumstances that are going on right now, and perhaps even be empathetic to people's situations, because there's been a lot of disruption. There's been a lot of good, but also there's been a lot of disruption that's happened as well. So that is one challenge, I would say. I'm trying to think if it sort of fits, but the other challenge that maybe I have is people in themselves think that you need to have a problem, right? You need to have a problem that needs fixing. And with coaching, we know that that's not true. People are whole and resourceful and creative as they are. And I firmly believe that it's one of the reasons why I love coaching so much. Really what you're doing is empowering people to get from where they are now to where they want to be in the future. So one of the biggest challenges is when I speak to people is they go, well, yeah, I don't really have any financial problems. I'm actually all set. And that's fine. That's great. And then you start maybe asking some questions like, so if you lost your job tomorrow or you were unable to work, what would be your plan of action? You know, and so commonly people say, well, I'd just get another job. Right? Well, maybe that's realistic, but what if you can't? Right? What if circumstances don't allow? Or what if you become ill? Right? Do you have insurance? And this sort of gets people to start thinking in a different way. Financial planning is not just about a best case scenario, but it's about a worst case scenario as well. And it's not very nice to think about, but inevitably we are all going to get old. And we are all going to die, right? That's just the inevitability of life. It's something that's certain. So there is a challenge within that in getting people to start thinking about finances in a different way, because we've been so conditioned, to sort of live in a particular way that we just sort of, maybe a lot of people live for the now, like myself, like I did, right? So sort of living for the now, going with the flow. Retirement's 50 years off, we'll worry about it then. partly, we are going to feel the effects of this further down the line. You know, now the UK is a trillion pounds in debt, right? But if you were to ask people in the UK for an unexpected bill payment of £300 tomorrow, 11 million people wouldn't be able to pay it. And they would have to take out a loan, take out debt. So, you know, there's challenges around what's happening in the future. Are people going to be taxed more? We don't know that yet, right? But we need to be prepared for these things that are coming, and we know they're going to come. And I guess encourage people, get people to start thinking about their finances, even if it is boring.
So I want to talk a little bit about the sort of the well-being effect of the work that you do, because I recognize that has a huge impact. But before we talk about that, there was something you said about keeping on top of the knowledge of the ever-changing world. And I recognize that people that are watching and listening are thinking about a niche or an area of work that they might be in with around that sort of social impact, and thinking, so how do I keep on top of that knowledge? So I'm curious, what are the things that you do that allow you to sort of keep on top of the knowledge that you need to know in order to do this work?
I'm an avid podcast listener. I love listening to podcasts. So I walk every day for an hour to an hour and a half, depending. So I always manage to get in a podcast, and maybe 2-3 times a week they are financial podcasts. So that's one thing I do. So I think looking at, podcasts aren't for everyone, right? But it could be reading, or it could be looking at blog posts that are coming out, getting access to information or new reports that are being done, so that you can sort of stay on top of your industry or whatever specialty that is. So for me personally, there's like employee benefits surveys that are done. The banks, as I mentioned before, Hargreaves Lansdown, so they will have resources that can help us better understand the challenges of employees. And the second thing is, I think, I don't like necessarily like the word tribe, but I think it's important to have people around you, a supportive network of people who are either where you're at or maybe above where you're at, so that you can then learn from them, you know, either what's going on in the market at the moment or even just skills in general in your field. So I have a mentor, but I also have a community of other financial coaches, and we can all share and update each other with the latest news. So I think having a community of people is really, really important. Yeah.
And just before we talk about well-being, I just want to sort of touch a little bit more on, so what does that bring for you, having that community of people, having that knowledge, sort of feeding yourself with information? How does that impact you?
Well, it gives me new perspectives, for sure. When you sort of sit at your desk, or when I sit at my desk on my own, and you're sort of in your own little bubble, in a way you kind of lose the objectivity, right? You don't get the same view of different perspectives, because you're just looking through your own lens. And in order to sort of grow and challenge, for me it's beneficial to have a network of people that can perhaps come up with other things that I wouldn't even think about. Right. Whether that's to do with having my own company, and, you know, whether to start looking at limited companies, or whether that's, you know, looking at new studies that have been done around revised mortgage repayments. Right. And also, there's so much going on. You can miss a lot of stuff. You can miss a lot of, you can't be everywhere at all times. But if I speak to someone and they have a specific request, and I don't know the answer, to have a network of people that I can refer back to and say, well, you know, this person is thinking about renewing their mortgage, what's going to be most useful to them? If someone could provide me with the latest information, then that's going to benefit everyone all round. So, yeah, I think it helps to feed back to people I'm coaching as well.
Yeah, I sort of really resonate with that idea of a community of people of like-minded or within that same sector can help you to stay on top of that area that you're working in, and help you have new ideas and move forward with that, and also remove that sense of isolation, because even though you work with an organization, you're also working at home on your own. And by having that network, it helps to remove that isolation, so you feel part of something and connected to that sort of bigger picture.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, to add to that, even as an Animas coach, not everyone who is a financial coach comes from this space of transformational coaching. And so, like, you know, there might be people who are financial advisors, or who are insurance brokers, who are financial coaches. You know, what I bring is this sort of transformational coaching, this piece of the mindset, and exploring what's going on beneath that for people. And the Animas community is supportive in helping me think of perhaps even questions to ask people, right? Looking at different perspectives and paradigms that people live in, right? So these two together is sort of what's brought me into this sort of space. But I think that allows me to give back to the community, and also other coaches can share from their point of view, maybe things that I haven't considered as well. So yeah, it's definitely good.
So I want to talk a little bit about, or hear a little bit about, the side of well-being that comes from this work that you do. So this idea that when you work with organizations, there is a shift in the well-being of the employees that work with you and work with your colleagues. If you could just kind of share a little bit more about that.
Yes. Yeah, so maybe just take us back to the beginning of our discussion, when I mentioned that, you know, there's something like 28 million people in the UK that have financial anxiety. What's interesting is when employers were asked, what do they think their employees are most concerned about? They said that it was workload and work-life balance. So they believed it was something like 35% was going to be work-life balance and something like 40% was workload. Actually, most people that have concerns within the workplace, 30% are worried about finances. Or I think when asked what the top three worries were, the top one was financial worries. That was 30%. The second was health, so 25%. And the third was retirement provision, which was 24%. So financial, people worried about their financial position is actually more of a concern than people think it is, right? It's often a cause for burnout. So I had really quite bad burnout, which is one of the reasons why I decided to become a self-employed coach. The pressure of work can get very intense for some people. And if you have a lot of responsibilities, not just in work, but outside of work as well, that creates additional stresses, not just financially, but emotionally as well, right? And this is what we're calling emotional well-being, right? You spend all day at work, 7 a.m. when people are commuting, well, when people were commuting, and you get back home late at night, and maybe families, people's children are already going to bed. People have less time. People have less time to spend with families. People are losing that sense of purpose because you're sort of perhaps working in a role which isn't allowing you to fulfill other needs, other purposes of life. So for me, I think you either get purpose through what you do, or your job allows you to create a greater purpose. So for example, giving to charity, or even going on holiday, right? It allows you to do the things that you want to enjoy. And that is part of well-being. That's part of our emotional well-being. And I guess this is possibly one of the reasons why people look for different roles, right? Maybe they don't feel like they're contributing anymore, or they might not feel that they're growing anymore, both financially and professionally as well, right? So they're kind of intertwined, this idea of just general emotional well-being, but also financial well-being. And by creating a plan, it gives someone that visibility. So it's giving them security now, whether that's you need to save more, you could be investing more, putting into your pensions more, reviewing your mortgage, whatever it is, for the financial security for the future, because you're laying that foundation. But you're also allowing people to have the enjoyment, this freedom that they can do with their money. Right? If they can go on holiday or treat themselves to a new piece of tech or whatever that is, right? Treat their kids, I don't know. So it's not just about the security, but it's also about the enjoyment and the freedom that we get now and in the future. So the plan helps people to do that, and that's what improves people's financial well-being or general emotional well-being.
And you spoke there as well about, part of burnout led you to be self-employed. And I'm just wondering here, that self-employed piece, how did you go about doing that? And how was the sort of the financial work that you do impacted you as a self-employed person?
Oh, massively, massively, yeah. I guess somewhere sort of deep down, I sort of always knew I wanted to be self-employed. I mean, I'm self-employed, but I obviously work with a company, but I'm still self-employed. So that still requires, you know, as a business to have, you know, your accountant to look at, you know, whether you should be limited company, self-employed, whatever that is. Yeah, it's made me, I guess, look at my expenses. I mean, I've worked in startups before. And as someone who works in business development, you are thinking about the numbers quite a lot, right? So you're thinking about, you know, how many deals you're making, but also how much commission you're getting. What's the time allocation of people in the team who are going to be working on the project, and the knock-on effect that has, and how much people are being paid. So fundamentally, I was aware of business and business structures, and I've also helped SMEs get to the next level through working in the companies. So I felt like I understood quite a lot, but the system in the UK is very different. The system in the UK is very different to what it is in Dubai. You don't pay tax in Dubai. So in the UK, there's a lot of processes and procedures which you need to sort of get your head around to make sure that you're legally compliant. And Hatch is an FCA regulated company. And that means that we have an ethical obligation, right, to do things properly. So get the right insurance, get the right systems in place, make sure you're paying tax in the right way. And I think just through the financial coaching, this gave me the confidence to set up and go, okay, well, I'm doing the right things. And if not, they can change further down the line. So yeah, it definitely opened my eyes.
And so somebody was watching this and is sort of going, you know, that they're seeing the work that you're doing, they're hearing the impact that this has, not only for somebody financially, but also emotionally, that well-being piece of creating that calm and reducing that stress. And somebody was going, you know, I would like to work in this way, but maybe I wouldn't want to work for an organization. How might somebody do this work, but not with an organization?
Yeah, so this, I think this model, I mean, this is my completely through my lens, right? It might be that this has been going on for years, but from what I've seen from the market over the last couple of years, are these organisations, for example, Sanctus is another one, but there's quite a few of them now, that are kind of working with companies on, not part-time, but maybe like on-demand sort of basis, if you like. So when the demand is there, employees can book through coaches, and this has opened up a space for coaches to become qualified or work with a company and provide their service to the company through this third party. And there are quite a few companies on the market now. Sanctus is one that does well-being, Hatch does financial coaching, but there are quite a few that are available. Depending on the company, different companies have different benefits available to their employees, right? So I think this is a big space, working with companies, and there are quite a few companies doing this because it's scalable. So for me, it was actually a Facebook post that popped up and I applied. But I think LinkedIn is a good place to look as well. I'm quite social, having worked for social media agencies. So LinkedIn is a good place to look as well. But I think there's space for collaborations as well, right? So working with a company has one set of benefits, but working with other peers, other coaches, has a different set of benefits. And again, you can have coaches that are in-house as well, right? And that might mean that then not necessarily working with a third party or an umbrella organization, but they would be working directly with a company itself, which you could consider as a third party organization as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it sort of makes me think about this idea that as a coach, you could choose to work with a third party to create that social impact that you desire. In this case, it's a financial social impact via that third party. So you're not looking for your clients yourself as a one-to-one clients to come and work with you. You're working through them to enable that impact to take place. And through working with them in their finances, you're also working with them with their well-being. You're also looking at their future. You're also empowering both women and men around, you know, how do they have those challenging conversations or embarrassing, sometimes we might look at it, conversations around money and our money challenges.
Yeah, I mean, I work one-to-one with people as well, which is an added benefit because realistically, anyone who's open to it can benefit from a financial plan. The added benefit of being with a workplace or working with someone who is perhaps an owner of a company is that they get additional discounts. And that's because the government actually sets aside a budget of £500 per person to receive advice on their pensions. And I mean, that alone, a lot of people don't know, right? So if you're questioning your pension right now, you have up to £500, you know, worth of tax-free advice that you can receive, right? Just to have advice about your pensions. And I think, you know, that's the added benefit that we give to companies, is that they get a significant discount, they increase their productivity, they reduce their costs as well. So that's one side of it, and we have the flexibility to work directly with people as well. Different companies have different structures, but there are opportunities out there to shape your coaching in whatever way fits your lifestyle, and that is why the goals are so important in the first place to define, right? So for me, I do financial coaching, but I also do confidence coaching with entrepreneurs. And so having created my own financial plan, I was able to see, you know, what exactly that would look like. But yeah, people work one-to-one. You can work through companies. You can work in schools, for example, you know, even empowering staff or children, right? So there's lots of different avenues, I think, from what I've seen. I think when I qualified, I was looking a lot at one-to-one sort of on my own. And that's has a place. But you do need that network around you if you are going to do that to help you. Yeah.
So we've sort of heard a lot about the work that you do, the impact that it has, the different people that you work with, and how as coaches we might get involved in this work, whether it's as working one-to-one with our clients or working with a third party to be part of an organization that's going into a space and doing some work. And I'm wondering what's next for you? Where does this work take you, or where would you like to go next with it?
Oh, that's a great question. There's a few things that are in the works. I don't know how much I can disclose, but yeah, there's a few things in the works. I guess ultimately we want to be working with more companies on a bigger scale. I really do believe that this is something that's needed. As someone who had stress, had burnout, had financial anxiety, that's not to say a plan can eradicate that completely, but it can definitely put you on the right stead to feel more confident. In the future, I'd like to think that we reach more people. So the organization Hatch, they're in their fourth or fifth year now, so they're picking up traction. We've got new products coming out into the pipeline. Things have shifted for us slightly during coronavirus. We were sometimes going into companies to coach people face to face. That has 100% shifted online. So maybe before, the split was about 50-50, and that's sort of gone down over time. So we're looking at about 100% online. So I think things are going to be more online. There's going to be more workshops, working closer with people to help them achieve those goals. And yeah, I think for me, I'm doing one-to-one coaching with entrepreneurs as well. So for me, I guess it's the combination of the two. And over time, that's going to evolve. And perhaps there'll be new products as well that's going to combine the two.
That's fabulous. It's great. It sounds like there's lots of exciting things sort of hidden in the distance.
Yeah, some things might drop next week, but it might be next year. So it depends. Yeah.
I guess just to sort of bring our conversation to a close, I'd be interested to hear what's been sort of the biggest achievement for you personally, whether that's with a client or organization, through this work that you've done?
Oh, what's the biggest achievement?
And that doesn't necessarily mean financial. I mean, sort of what's had the greatest impact for you?
Yeah, I guess it's seeing the results. It's seeing the results. So it's nice to say as a coach that you're having an impact. But when a client emails you and they're like, I've just paid off 10 grand debt, you're like, oh, that's pretty impressive. Or when, you know, a coach comes to you and they're like, oh, I've just done my best year and I've just signed another client. It's those success stories that, I guess, it's a chain reaction, right? So it helps with my confidence, but also it shows that people it's making a difference in people's lives, and that is so empowering. You know, the work that I was doing before, I really enjoyed it. I love social media, but this is different. This is really, I think I suffered with mental health issues when I was younger, and to now be able to sort of be in a place where you can empower other people to go after their dreams and reach their goals in life, that is really fulfilling. So for me, I think that's the biggest success that I've had. There are individual cases, but I think overriding, I've coached now over 200 people in the past year or so. So that in and of itself is an achievement for me, where I was. So, yeah.
Brilliant. That's great, Sarah. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us and your ways of working. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a very interesting conversation, and I hope the audience, you know, if anyone has any questions or you know, has any thoughts around the topic, please reach out to me. I'm definitely open to having conversations and just hearing other coaches' journeys, and if anyone's interested in financial coaching and what that means for them. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.